Olympia, and the moderator for that event is Brother Vincent Blanco.
We would like to thank Brother Whitten and Brown Hope for their assisting us with our Black History Month program. Additionally, we'd like to give a shout out to the Oregon AFL-CIO, the SEIU Local 503, AFRAM, Brother Reggie Rosanica, Aurora Biggers, Russell Sanders, Pete Talley, Pacific Northwest Labor History Association, and also Brother Vince Blanco. The Coalition of Black Trade Union meets the second Tuesday of every month at 6 p.m. You can join us by link on February the 10th, 2026. You can join us by Zoom link.
Our email address is orcbtu10, the number 10, at gmail.com. We would love to hear from you joining us in our evolving adventure of representing Black union workers. For more information about our Black History program, please check out our Facebook page at facebook.com/orcbtu/. And with that, have a joyous Black History Month. And holla.
Hello out there, this is Jello Biafra. If you're tired of the OCA, Walt Disney, Westinghouse, General Electric, and police departments telling you what you should listen to, stay tuned in to KBOO Portland, listener-sponsored non-commercial community radio, 90.7 on your FM dial unless your FM was made in America.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel?
Welcome to Prison Pipeline, produced at the studios of KBOO Portland. I'm Karen James. The national spotlight has been on Minneapolis as ICE and Border Patrol agents escalate efforts to detain and deport immigrant community members. We mourn the loss of Renee Good and Alex Preti, murdered by these federal cowards in masks with guns. In Oregon, the work continues to protect and support our immigrant community through organizations such as PERC, the Portland Immigrant Rights Coalition. PERC supports immigrants' rights through direct assistance, education, legal support, and advocacy. With me to talk about this work is Alyssa Walker Keller, PERC coordinator. Welcome, Alyssa.
Hi, Karen. Thanks so much for having me.
So, Alyssa, first of all, do you have any thoughts about what's happening in Minneapolis?
I have lots of thoughts. First and foremost, just endless solidarity with the people of Minneapolis and in Minnesota in general, just the incredible efforts of everyday people on the ground to keep their neighbors safe, to come alongside those who can't leave their homes right now, and the brave, brave work that people are doing to document what's happening as they are occupied, and just sending a lot of love to those organizers, their families. We're in communication with them and learning a lot from them so that we're prepared and taking lessons with us. But everything about this is so unnecessary, such a distraction from other issues that I'm sure this administration is trying to distract from, and a test of power. And I think that I believe that the community will win that test.
And there have been reports that detention has slowed here in Oregon in recent months.
Yeah, so we've been tracking detentions, like the number volume, since July as an organization. And we saw this really significant uptick in October, beginning around mid-month, where we saw both more agents, more activity, more detentions in community rather than at different processing facilities. And it escalated in November to the highest level that we've seen reported. The hotline received reports of about 370-something individuals who were taken from our community in November alone. We received 5,000 calls during that time, which was an intense labor for our mostly volunteer but incredibly brave dispatcher crew. And we have seen a drop in numbers beginning in December. And this month as well, we've seen a significant reduction. Last week, we saw 18 detentions reported to the hotline. This past week, we saw 11. So That doesn't mean that there aren't more detentions happening. We're always really clear to communicate that the hotline only works as well as the people, you know, reaching out and keeping us informed of what's happening. But I do think that it tracks with the trend of a surge of agents to Midwest, to Minnesota.
So they're all in Minnesota.
I think, you know, we're watching the news right now and seeing that it's highly likely that they will be dispersed from Minnesota. And what that means for all of us is everyone's next big guess.
Now, you mentioned the hotline. Give that hotline right now and tell folks when they should call that hotline.
The flagship part of PERC, the part that maybe people most know, is a 24-hour hotline that is mostly volunteer-operated, as I mentioned. That number is 1-888-622-1510. And you can call that number if you suspect you see ICE activity, if you are yourself the eyewitness, and can call and give us details about what you're seeing, what you're hearing, as well as a place where people can call if a loved one has been detained and to connect that family with resources. So kind of two different pieces. We're both the folks who are helping suss out whether or not ICE is indeed in community and helping to clarify what is rumor and what is actually worth, you know, folks being aware of, and then what to do when ICE is present, how to make sure that that's documented, how to get families support during and after a detention.
Alyssa, talk about PERC. Now, I mentioned that PERC supports immigrant rights through direct assistance, education, legal support, and advocacy. So talk about the work of PERC.
So the hotline is the piece that we are most known for. It's the backbone of rapid response in Oregon. We partner with Oregon for All and a number of really incredible organizations who are embedded in their communities, building trust. And so when we receive a report to the hotline of a detention, we take down information about the detained person, you know, name, date of birth, emergency contacts, circumstances of the detention. If the person has access to an attorney, and if they don't, we're quick to connect them with Oregon's Universal Representation System, ECHO, Equity Corps of Oregon. If possible, sometimes that, you know, we're able to coordinate and support the initiation of rapid response. The reality is that there aren't enough immigration attorneys in Oregon at this time. And you know, when you have 900 people detained in that 3-month period that I mentioned, that big surge, Oregonians who are being held in detention around the country, and getting legal access is, you know, very complicated. So additionally, we refer families to other resources. You know, we don't have lawyers, but we refer them to ECHO. We also refer people to different spaces where there can be access to support, whether that's a regional aid organization that may be able to provide support. Sometimes there's networks and mutual aid groups we can connect people to. So we rely heavily on statewide partners. We ourselves don't offer rent assistance, but we connect people with organizations who can help families think through and sort through the next steps in the aftermath of a loved one being abducted. The other thing that PERC holds that we're really fiercely proud of is our ICE Legal Observer Program. So, well, there's a few things we hold. We train legal observers to specifically document ICE activity, and those folks are PERC volunteers who are out primarily at Immigration Court in downtown Portland and then at the McAdam ICE facility. And we have a sister program in Eugene that also is doing the same thing at their processing facility. So those legal observers are trained to document interactions and alert if someone goes into an ICE check-in at the Portland facility and doesn't come back out. And it gives us the opportunity to initiate rapid response, make sure that folks have information about their rights. Beginning in, I believe, the end of October, beginning of November, we actually have a space across the street from McAdam's ICE facility. And so we're able to provide resources, information, some hospitality. It's becoming a place where community members can go if a loved one was detained and they don't know what to do next. And so we've seen, I believe, somewhere between 1,500 and 1,700 individuals who have come through just in November, December alone to that space for the first time, just looking for information and resources, which really feels like we're meeting a need in the moment to connect people to resources on the ground. And those systems, you know, we're constantly like shoring up how the hotline and the resource center can work together. And then additionally, mm-hmm. we work with community partners to bring the Meager Watch trainings out to community. We want anyone and everyone to know how to record and report ICE activity. And in the situations where we're not sure if ICE is present at a business or in a community place, we will send messages to ask people to verify ICE activity. A lot of different pieces of the rapid response moments that, you know, activating people to show up.
So you mentioned Oregon for All and ECHO as two of the organizations within the coalition. Who are some of the other organizations in the coalition?
PERC, actually, our name is a bit of a misnomer at this point, because when we were founded as a grassroots coalition back in 2005, 2006, it was a group of community organizers from a variety of organizations that came together and did a lot of coordinating and planning. We incorporated as a nonprofit about 2 to 3 years ago. So we are neither Portland-centric nor a coalition necessarily in the same sense that we were historically. So now we're one of the many organizations in this network of Oregon for All, as well as other coalitions that we're a part of. And our really specific role in these coalitional spaces is the rapid response, activating it, connecting people to resources and to the folks who do direct services afterward. In addition to the Legal Observer Program, we train people who are MIGRA watchers, who are folks who we have provided training on how to observe, record, report ICE activity to the hotline. And in some situations, we may ask those folks to go verify whether or not ICE is indeed present in the community if it's in a public space. And so those folks aren't PERC volunteers. They're people that we've trained, though. And so, and there's over 5,000 of them across the state at this time. And we coordinate with local organizations on the ground to make sure that, you know, there's a growing awareness of the fact that there's a big base of people who really want to show up in solidarity and support. And we try to prepare those folks for how to be most supportive to community members in a really traumatic moment.
You have the ICE Legal Observers, who are PERC volunteers. Talk about that training, and are there any upcoming trainings for the ICE Legal Observers?
We get that question a lot. Yeah, you know, being a legal observer, in our work, a legal observer is someone who is asked to remain neutral. And that's a really challenging role to be in when you see injustice happening. But it's that neutrality in what they're recording and how they're documenting that is actually really critical for evidence in court. And so that particular role means a really intensive training, a couple hour training for folks who are legal observers with us, as well as if they want to volunteer on the ground near the ICE processing facility, because that is a really contentious place. We provide trainings around de-escalation. We're increasing access to trainings around stop the bleed, just, you know, trying to be like really thoughtful about how to prepare people to be on the ground in a way that's safe. Because that is a place with a lot of intensity and a lot of different groups and a lot of emotions. And we're, you know, constantly looking for resources to connect people who are doing that important work, how to process the trauma that they're, you know, witnessing. There's a lot of vicarious trauma on the ground as we accompany immigrant community members who don't have a choice about whether or not they show up to that space. So it's typically our trainings that we do for legal observers come through trusted networks, people that we already have relationship with, and we do background like screenings or reference checks with people as well. And MIGRA Watch is perhaps a more open-handed group of folks. Like it's a lower barrier to entry because we want anyone and everyone to know how to observe, record, and report, but we still require a consent form with them as well. So we do have two MIGRA Watch trainings a month, one virtual and one in person. And then periodically, we will coordinate with partners to do legal observer trainings. The tricky part about legal observers is that we also need to have a legal organization on the back end. And so we partner really closely with an organization that's been willing to hold that. They've been fantastic partners. And also, you know, capacity is a limitation. We can't train everyone to be a legal observer because that's a lot of liability to hold. So we have so many people who are reaching out and really wanting to support, and I'm so grateful for that. And there's so many ways to engage. This is just one of the many ways you can be part of this movement space right now, because we need a diversity of tactics. We need a diversity of people showing up in a lot of different roles, whether that's mutual aid, supporting your schools, doing neighborhood organizing, maybe even like providing the skills that maybe people have specifically, whether it's, you know, somatic or artistic or, you know, mental health coordination and support to resources to community members. We need a really robust movement with a lot of different roles. We just happen to occupy one specific lane and we try to hold it really well.
So when someone does call the 1-800 number, talk about that process.
Yeah. So someone will connect with the dispatcher who will kind of you know, ask what they're observing, what they're seeing, the reason the person's calling. Dispatchers are, you know, receiving all kinds of questions, really. It could be just someone wanting to report something they heard, something they saw. Some people call and ask questions to verify a rumor that they've heard in community. Some people are calling looking specifically for resources. But generally, if a person is calling to report a detention, we'll collect the information that I mentioned earlier about name, date of birth, country of origin, emergency contacts, and whether that person has legal support. And if they don't, we refer them to Equity Corps then. If folks believe that they see ICE activity, our dispatchers will then ask a series of questions using CLEAR acronym, which is counting the location of the incident, equipment being used, the activity being observed, and the report time. And then dispatchers will discern how to proceed next.
Alyssa, talk about some of the stories of people being detained.
I think we're hearing a lot of trauma. You know, we hear all kinds of stories, frankly. And I think that like breeds a lot of fear in community too. People are really afraid to go out in community when they know that they may or may not come home. So we hear a lot about the mental health impacts this is having on folks who are sheltering in place, essentially, who are having to make hard decisions about whether or not they can go to work or school or go get access food and medical care. I think that we're also watching, you know, harm being done. You know, when somebody is detained, it's really hard for the family member, for instance, to recover the vehicle that perhaps they were driving. Suddenly they have a vehicle that needs towed somewhere with broken glass everywhere when an agent pulls people out of their vehicles. There's many, many stories that we hear from community members who will call back and talk about the trauma that they experienced and wanting to know, like, mental health services and resources that they can process what happened with their children. And of course, folks, you know, really want to know what's going to happen next to their loved one, what the process looks like once somebody is in detention. It is really horrific to suddenly become a single parent overnight and suddenly have to be figuring out not only how to maintain contact with their loved one who's been taken away and how to, you know, put money in their commissary so that they can make phone calls and check in with the family and lawyers. But suddenly this caregiver, this parent who maybe wasn't the person who was out in community, who wasn't detained, is suddenly left with, how do I pay rent next month? How am I going to get our kids to practice in the school? How are we going to secure food? And so we're also seeing the impacts on youth. We're seeing, you know, teenagers having to take new roles in their households as well to be providers for their family members as well and make hard decisions about whether or not they can consider their own future and their own education or if they need to be spending time thinking about how to take care of their younger siblings and their parents. So there's ripple effects that we're seeing and hearing all across community. And one thing that I think, you know, I've heard, you know, an educator even recently share, this situation is training young people to believe that it's educators who will be protecting them and putting them, their bodies on the line to keep kids safe from their own government. And the impact of that is going to be seen for decades. You know, the long-term generational impacts of what is happening right now will be horrific, I think, for people's mental health and trust in government, trust in society. And so the sooner this ends, the better.
And a few cities in Oregon have declared states of emergency, Woodburn, Salem. Where is ICE or any federal activity currently in Oregon?
It's really hard to predict. They don't let us know. Last week, we saw detentions in primarily in Multnomah County, Washington County, and Marion County. But they certainly don't give us a heads up ahead of actions. And so people are really doing a lot of awareness. They have a lot of awareness of, you know, if they see something unusual, they say something. If they see strange drones or unusual people circling in their community, taking pictures of license plates, those kinds of behaviors are things that people are learning to report to us to help us keep an eye on what's happening in different neighborhoods.
And they blow their whistles. Talk about the whistles. There's so many groups who are making whistles and Know Your Rights packets to hand out to people. Talk about that and the impact of the whistles and getting that information to our immigrant community.
Yeah, I mean, that really speaks to the diversity of tactics. There are folks who have really decided that that's like how they want to engage and have been providing those Know Your Rights as well as whistle kits to different community members. There's definitely mixed feelings about it. You know, there's folks who feel unsafe or even re-traumatized when they hear whistles, and there's folks who really appreciate it. And so we just really encourage people, when you're making those decisions, listen to the folks who are in your community, ask like what they need and prioritize that as like the next step. And we've been really pleased to see the really organic way that lots of different groups are cropping up. Some are focused on building whistle kits. Some are doing community patrols. Some are organizing food or walking buses to school in their communities. And I think one of the unique things about PERC is that like we are both a central place, but we also really encourage like this proliferation of decentralized groups doing really important community organizing work, because we're a very small organization despite being statewide, and we're going to need everybody stepping in the roles that they can.
And what are the needs of your organization?
I'll be candid. We are very small, so we're trying to staff up and grow our capacity. So we are constantly encouraging people to, you know, if you can't give of your time, give of your treasure. And we're really looking at the importance of organizing right now, whether that's organizing those who are impacted to make sure that their stories are centered and that they get to advocate for what this experience has been like for them, the horror that they've been experiencing. We're also really encouraging those who have, you know, de-escalation training themselves to show up in really powerful ways. We're encouraging people who have skills around mental health to reach out to us and to other partners. Our partner organizations are doing a lot of work on the ground as well. So, you know, fundraising for the organizations that are providing the ongoing, like, actual tangible resources post-detention to families is really critical. I think that we're in a moment where, you know, it's states' rights versus the federal government, and we're going to need to be a robust community who gives generously of our time and capacity, because our neighbors who were brave enough to come here and to give to our communities need us. And we also, we're stronger together. Like, this community is being hurt by the separation that's happening right now, by taking parents from children, by taking workers from businesses.
And the lawyers who work and help these people who are being detained, are you in need of more attorneys around the state?
I mean, I would let, you know, the Equity Corps program speak for themselves, but I think that that is absolutely a need. You know, we don't have enough attorneys for the sheer volume of people being detained or people who are in detention. So if that is a skill set that you have, I highly recommend you reach out to ECHO.
And for people who are very traumatized about what is happening around our country with these federal agents and our immigrant community, but can't get out on the streets, can't sign up to do an ICE watch or be a legal observer, what other ways can they support or what other work can they do?
You know, there are people who have time and treasure that they can give, and there's folks who don't. And that doesn't mean that there isn't a space in this work. Heaven knows, we need the artists writing songs. We need the people who are creating, you know, the beauty that we all need right now. We need the folks who are willing to provide childcare and make meals for folks who maybe can't leave their homes. Reaching out to your schools is a really good way to ask what supports they need. We also, like, really desperately need people to call and ask their legislators to listen to the voices of those who are impacted. And I mean, first and foremost, abolish ICE. Like, that agency is so young in the grand history of agencies and has done so much harm and is receiving so much funding that should be directed at healthcare, that should be directed at education, that should be received for food. And to watch that kind of money be poured into harm in our communities is something that we should all be outraged about and reaching out to our legislators. You know, we're really encouraging people to call their senators and their representatives to tell them, first, don't fund anything further with the DHS, you know, like, funding that could be potentially moving forward in the Senate soon. Second, to abolish ICE as an institution, to not fund another cent towards it, and even consider like clawing back funds, because we've seen in the past that folks have been able to claw back funds from already allocated funding. And I think that's something that should be absolutely considered in this moment, given the harm that's happening in our communities.
I would also say to seek the truth because as we see what we are seeing with our own eyes and hearing with our own ears, with every sense that we have, to seek the truth and don't take what the Trump administration is trying to force us to believe.
Yeah, I think we all have been given powers of observation. This is an opportunity for us to make our voices heard and to be part of consented reality that what's happening is not what we're being told is happening. One only has to look to Minnesota to know that they will, without discretion, cause harm to people, and it's being documented, and we need to believe the truth tellers.
And you mentioned our legislators, and today is the first day of the 2026 Oregon legislative session, but there are some proposals introduced. They do focus on protecting immigrants.
Yeah, a lot of our partners are working really hard on the immigrant justice package. I really encourage folks to look into that as it becomes more well known. I think it's going to be really important to fund multiple phases of supports. So we will need legal support for folks. We also need community organizers. We've seen what's happening on the ground, how important it is for people to know how to provide aid to one another and to show up for their neighbors. And so I hope that that's funding that the state is considering investing in as well. We are at a very precipitous point, I believe, around evictions. As I mentioned earlier, with 900 breadwinners removed from their homes in the last several months, and 1,100 since July of last year. There's only so far that rent assistance and GoFundMes and whatnot can provide, support. So both we need the rent assistance, but we also need systems of care to onboard people into job skills who maybe haven't had to work or haven't been able to work because they've been the child care provider in their homes. I think it's going to be really important that we as a state put our money where our mouth is and invest in taking care of each other. Immigrant community members are one of us. They're Oregonians just like us, and investing in them because they've invested in us is something I take really seriously, and I hope that our legislators are planning to do the same.
Some of the proposals that the Democrats have put forth are, one is to allow Oregonians to sue the federal immigration agents for violating their constitutional rights. Another is to limit mask use and standardize identification for all law enforcement, so prohibiting law enforcement officers from concealing their identities. Another proposal is to prevent state grants or contracts from going to companies aiding federal immigration enforcement efforts. And another proposal is to require schools and universities to notify parents if verified federal immigration agencies appear on campus, and to create guidelines for state agencies to respond if ICE demands governmental data, and strengthen Oregon's anti-discrimination protections for immigrants, and also to allow Oregon to withhold payment to the federal government if the federal government unlawfully withholds funds from the state. So the federal government right now is threatening to withhold funds to sanctuary states, of which Oregon is one. So any thoughts about those proposals?
It's a lot of proposals, which I think speaks to the diversity of tactics. There's a lot of people coming up with really good ideas. And I think we're really going to need to make sure that we have plans A, B, C, and D in place as the information changes in the moment. We're going to need to adapt. We can't possibly replace the federal funds that potentially could be withheld. So I think it's good that they're thinking about how to make sure that we have a plan in place for what to do if that is indeed what happens. And I'm just so proud of this state for the work that we have as community members put in to make sure that we have the strongest sanctuary policy in this country. And I will also just say that no one is above the law. And so agents, absolutely, we need to be able to see their faces, to know their identities, to hold accountability when they're in community causing harm. Nobody is above the law, even if the federal government is saying that they can perform acts that are illegal. Mm-hmm. Bottom line is what ICE has been doing is illegal. We see moments when they are using the same plate on two separate vehicles. We see them switching plates, driving in unsafe ways, driving with no plates. And that comes at a cost to communities' trust in the government. And so I'm really hopeful that we will see some accountability measures coming at both like the city, county, state, and federal levels from all of our electeds.
Yes, from law enforcement to our governor, our onboard against ICE. It's wonderful. Alyssa, give your contact information, your hotline number, and any upcoming trainings that are scheduled with PERC.
I don't have the next training in front of me, but I will say that you can go to our social media, our Instagram or our Linktree, which I can make sure that you have, for the next couple of trainings that we have coming up from NegroWatch. And then make sure that if anybody in the community, that you save this phone number in your phone, and that's 1-888-622-1510. You can check out our website at PERC Oregon. I believe our Instagram is PERC_Oregon. And we just really encourage you, if there's nothing else you take away from today, save that contact information. Call us if you believe you see ICE activity or if a loved one has been taken from the community, and call your electeds. Make sure that they hear your voice, because this is the moment that we need to make sure our voices are heard.
Alyssa Walker-Keller with PERC, thank you so much.
Thank you, Karen. Have a good rest of your day.
This is Prison Pipeline, produced at the studios of KBOO Portland. Listen to this and previous Prison Pipeline programs at kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. Like Prison Pipeline on Facebook. Thank you to our engineer, and thank you for listening.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, also heard at translator K220HR Hood River at 91.9 FM, and translator K282BH in Philadelphia.